Say that once more. The shore through June. Through June. And then, I don't know, I haven't figured out. Yeah, through June, recover. Recover. Thank you. All right. Good evening, everyone. Let's begin. So we find ourselves this week in Parshas Shlach. So first of all, our shiur tonight is sponsored by the Hamburger family in honor of Nechama Rachel Zakharoff's graduation. And we wish her much hatzlofa in her next life endeavors. All right. So we'll take a look at number one. By Davar Shalom Moshe Leiman. The Shbaruch Hu says to Moshe, saying, Shlach lecha anoshim v'yasuru es eretz kinan, asher ani nosein livnei Yisrael. So the Shbaruch Hu says to Moshe, Avinu, sent for yourself. Again, leaving aside, we're going to sidestep a little bit the bigger discussion about whether or not the Ribono Shel Olam agreed with this process, didn't agree with this process, not our topic for this evening. But point being, the Shbaruch Hu says to Moshe, Rabbeinu, send for yourself men, go scout out the land. You shall send one man each for his father's tribe. Each one shall be a chieftain in their midst. Meaning, don't send just anyone. Make sure you send significant people so that when they come back and they deliver a report, hopefully, again, the people will take what they have to say seriously. The people will appreciate, again, that they're coming and delivering something significant. And hopefully, Meretz Hashem, that can lay the groundwork for entry into Eretz Yisrael. The Torah then goes on. Vayishlach Moshe Moshe midbar Paran, Api Hashem, Kulam Anoshim Roshei Bnei Yisrael Hema. Moshe Avinu sends them, fine. In Psukim Dalid through Tesvav, the Torah then goes on to state the names of all the individuals, of all the tribal leaders who Moshe Rabbeinu sent. Okay, so we're not going to focus on that. Instead, what I want to draw your attention to is number two. So after we go through all of the Shvatim and the names of the Nesim, the names of the tribal princes or tribal representatives who were sent, so now the Torah says in number two, Eile Shmosa Anoshma Sher Shalach Moshe Lasuras Ha'aretz. These are the names of the people that Moshe Rabbeinu sent to scout out the land, Vayikra Moshe Lahoshea Binun Yehoshua. And then the Torah records something that is intriguingly dramatic, which is what? A name change. Now understand, this is not the first name change that we see in the Torah, but in general, whenever we see a name change, what does that generally indicate? That's change of status. Something is about to change. Something is about to be different. Whether it's Avram to Avraham, whether it's Sarai to Sarah, whenever you have some type of change, at the end of the day, it means the destiny of the individual is changing, circumstances are changing, something is going to deviate from what it was before. And so here in the midst of what is already a dramatic episode, a Moshe Rabbeinu sending in the Raglim, you know, again, as I always tell you, you have to learn these stories as if you're seeing them for the first time. So pretend like you don't know how the story is going to end. We don't know what the miraculum are going to say, what they're not going to say. All I know is that we are steps away from Eretz Yisrael. We are steps away from recognizing and realizing the Abrahamic vision, the Abrahamic destiny, the Abrahamic dream. Okay, they want to go on a reconnaissance mission to figure out the best way to go into the land. Sounds okay from the outset. And then right before they go, Moshe Rabbeinu feels compelled to change Yehoshua's name. What I'd like to try to explore tonight is one basic question. Why does Moshe Rabbeinu change Yehoshua's name? So time permitting, we're going to look at four different approaches. Take a look, and we're going to start with some just very simple Pashut Pshat approaches. Take a look at number three. V'chizkuni. V'chizkuni writes, V'yikra Moshe lo shea benun Yehoshua, lo shekaro atu Yehoshua. So the first thing V'chizkuni weighs on, because remember, what's troubling or what's difficult to understand about this name change is what? Is this is not the first time that we have seen Yehoshua or Hoshea referred to as Yehoshua. Meaning, if you were to look at number two in a vacuum without looking at the rest of the Torah, you would assume that until this point in time, how was Yehoshua referred to? As Hoshea. And now it's the first time the Torah is changing his name. Excuse me. Moshe changes his name to Yehoshua. But in fact, we know that's not true. Hoshea has been referred to as Yehoshua numerous times throughout the Torah, throughout, since we've been introduced to him again in the beginning of Shmos. So what's going on over here? What are you telling me that Moshe Rabbeinu is just changing his name now when the Torah's used this name before? So the Chizkuni validates this point. Lo shekaru ato Yehoshua. It doesn't mean that Moshe Rabbeinu changed Yehoshua's name now. Elakacha perush. Rather, here is the perush. Here is the understanding. Shekaru Moshe Yehoshua kivar kishenaaset misharso umatzachin ve'enav. In reality, Moshe Rabbeinu changed Yehoshua's name a long time ago. When Yehoshua became his servant. Now, at what point in time exactly did Yehoshua become the servant of Moshe? Let's leave that aside for now. It doesn't really matter exactly what point. But at the end of the day, the name change, even though the name change is being recorded now, the name change actually took place at some earlier point in time when Hosea first became the servant of Moshe. Moshe found incredibly redeeming spiritual qualities within this young man, and therefore changed his name, added a yud to his name, representing a heightened level of spirituality. Shekin matzino ba'Avraham, v'sara, v'yakov, Daniel, Hananya, Mishael, Azariah, Tzidkia, shekvar shmo, matanya, unechemya, nikra hatashasa. So all the Chizkuni is saying is, we see that sometimes when people, you know, there's a concept, I think actually I mentioned this in the Navi Shir on Shabbos, that the Gemara Maseches Megillah says, minolan d'shma garam. How do we know that a name, literally it means a name causes. Really what it means is a name captures the essence of the individual. Where do we know that a name captures the essence of the individual? So the Gemara gives a number of examples for that. One of the primary example the Gemara gives is Esther HaMalka. But the point the Arizal says is that a name captures the true essence of a person. The name captures the identity of a person. That's why when some people transcend themselves, they literally need a new name, because they've outgrown their name, so to speak. So says the Chizkuni, that's what happened over here. Hosea was a very nice guy, but his potential was not reflected in that name. And Moshe Rabbeinu sees this very early on, and therefore changes his name early on, as soon as Yehoshua becomes his servant. It happens to be recorded here. Again, the one part that's lacking in the Chizkuni is what? Is why here? So if that's true, that his name was changed earlier on, when he first becomes Moshe Rabbeinu's servant, why does the Torah choose to record that fact right over here? The Chizkuni does not address that particular issue, and the truth is that is a little bit of the Achilles heel in this approach. Number four, the Rabbeinu Bachai just quotes the other episodes where we see Yehoshua's name was already changed to Yehoshua earlier on. Take a look at number five. So what's the meaning of this name change? So remember, according to this first approach, Hosea's name was not changed to Yehoshua here. It was actually changed earlier on, which helps us understand why the name Yehoshua was used multiple times already in previous episodes. And it's, but again, why is it recorded here? Chizkuni doesn't tell us. But what is the meaning of this change? Says the Sfarno number five. Vayikra Moshe Hosea ben Yehoshua. Amar shahayanoda bishvato. It's a very beautiful insight. Yehoshua was well known within his tribe. Li'ishchayo. B'shem Hosea. See, he was known again as an Ishchayel, a brave man, a gallant man. He was known by Hosea. V'zeh shenikra lema'alo Yehoshua, mipnei shemoshe Rabbeinu kar lo kach, l'kavod, u'lehispalel alov, sheyihye nosha, v'sheyoshia acherim. What's amazing over here is the following. Moshe Rabbeinu, already from the time that Yehoshua first begins to serve him, to be his servant, to be his right-hand man, Moshe Rabbeinu sees incredible potential in Yehoshua. Now, whether or not he knew that Yehoshua was going to be to fill his shoes when Moshe Rabbeinu passed on, whether or not Yehoshua was going to take the reins of leadership, that's not immediately clear. But one thing he sees with absolute certainty is that Yehoshua has the capacity and the potential for greatness. Yehoshua has the ability to lead. So what does he do? He takes the name Hosea. Now, Hosea, if we were to translate it directly, it would mean what? Literally, to be saved. To be saved. Now, what that means is, it's really reflective, ultimately, again, on the self. It's a reflexive verb. To be saved, Moshe Rabbeinu says that essentially, Hosea, you have much greater potential. You don't just have the ability to save yourself, but what? You also have the ability to save, to uplift, and to inspire others. Says the Sfarno, that's the meaning of Yehoshua. Yehoshua means someone, again, who, yes, could save himself, because you have to be able to save yourself or you can't save anyone else. But more than just saving himself, he has the ability to save, uplift, and inspire others. And again, according to this first approach, as much as it's being recorded here in the episode of the Meraglim, it took place at some earlier date. Again, we don't know exactly when, but at some earlier time, again, when Moshe Rabbeinu already saw the incredible potential in his young attendant, he says, you have to, and again, understand the drama of that name change. What Moshe was saying to Yoshua was what? What Moshe was saying to Hoshea was, if you want to be successful in life, life can't be about you. Life can't be about saving yourself. Life can't just be about personal growth. Life has to be about what you're going to do for the collective. You want to be a successful Jew, you want to be a successful individual, figure out how you can be a giver. Figure out how you can be a contributor. Figure out how you could be value added, not just to yourself, but to your people. And that's the meaning of the name change. Hoshea is about self-salvation. Yehoshua represents the ability to give, inspire, and provide salvation to those around you as well. That's our first approach. Therefore, according to this approach, what does the name change have to do with the story of the Meraglim? Well, we're going to get to that. We're going to get to that. Good. But what is, according to this approach, what does the name change have to do with the story of the Meraglim? What? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. The question is, why is it recorded here? That's a kasha. That's a good question. But again, nothing to do with the story of the Meraglim. Take a look at number six. Another Chizkuni. A second approach. So the Chizkuni writes, V'yesh mefarshim, and this is also so amazing. Shina Shmo, now again, in this second approach of the Chizkuni, so again, remember, I quoted to the Chizkuni number three. So the Chizkuni's first approach was that, remember, the name change took place earlier on, and in reality has nothing to do with the story of the Meraglim. Nothing to do with the story of the Meraglim. The Chizkuni, however, is bothered by that approach. Why is he bothered by that approach? Because at the end of the day, what? It's here. So to say that it has nothing to do with the story of the Meraglim just seems a little bit strange. At the end of the day, it's here. So look what the Chizkuni writes. V'yesh mefarshim, shina shmo, why did Moshe Rabbeinu change Yehoshua's name? Al shehutzrach lios min Meraglim, because Yehoshua was one of the Meraglim, one of the spies. V'la'avar derech amolek b'shem Hoshea. See here what the Chizkuni is saying? What was Yehoshua? When's the first time we hear about Yehoshua? First time we heard about Yehoshua. Moshe Rabbeinu says to Yehoshua, say, v'hilachem ba'amalek. Right? And what did Yehoshua do to Amalek? What did he do to Amalek? He virtually decimated them. Says Moshe Rabbeinu, I can't send Hoshea into Amalekite territory. Why? Why? Because this, you have to assume there's probably a bounty on his head. Probably a bounty on his head. This is the guy, this was the leader who virtually decimated the entire Amalekite army. If word gets out that Hoshea is in Canaan, what's going to happen? Everybody's going to go after this guy. So what does Moshe Rabbeinu do? Moshe changes his name. It's like witness relocation program. Except again, he's still going into the thick of it. But again, remember, I guess in the days before you could Google someone, so if you changed their name, no one knew, people didn't remember what he looked like. Again, it was 2 years ago already. So the Maisa says to Chizkuni, it's very simple. You don't have to read a lot into this name change. There's no change of destinies. There's no salvational approaches over here. It's very simple. Moshe Rabbeinu does not want Yehoshua to get killed. He doesn't want there to be a bounty on Yehoshua's head. If word gets out that Hoshea is entering into Canaan, and remember again, they travel among the Amaleki. If the Amaleki find out, they're going to go after him, change his name to Yehoshua, cloak and obscure his identity, keep him safe. Okay, second approach. Sorry? Good, we're going to get to that previous suit as well. Take a look at number seven. Says the Kliyoker. A third approach. Again, these I'm just giving you a few simpler, almost like shorter approaches. Says the Kliyoker, the Eishomrin, and again, this is also very dramatic. The Eishomrin, Lefisha Haya Mishevet Yosef. Get ready for this. Get ready for this. So the Kliyoker says that, remember again, what tribe was Yehoshua from?
Ephraim.
Now remember, Ephraim is a subdivision of a bigger tribe. Remember again, the part of the bracha that Yosef got from his father Yaakov is he got pishtaim, he got a double portion. His double portion was expressed in the fact that, remember, there is no Shevet Yosef. There's are the Shvatim of Ephraim and Menasheh. That's Yosef's double portion. So it says the Kliyoker something so amazing. Moshe Rabbeinu knows that Yoshua is from Shevet Yosef. Get ready. Shehevi dibas echov. What did Yosef do? What did Yosef do? Vayove dibasom ra'a el avihem. Yosef tattled on his brothers. Yosef saw something that in his eyes did not look right. Remember again, Rashi points out that there are three things that Yosef observed, that he did not realize what he was seeing. They looked wrong to him, but in fact, again, the brothers were not doing anything wrong. And what did Yosef essentially do? Yosef brought these negative reports to his father, to Yaakov, and he maligned his brothers. He maligned his brothers. So says the Kli Yoter something amazing. Moshe Rabbeinu is worried. Not worried like the Chizkuni says that Yoshua is going to get killed by the Amaleki. And again, the name change is also not about the fact that he sees all the redeeming spiritual qualities. He's concerned. What is he concerned about? Yoshua is from the tribe of Yosef. Yosef brought the negative reports about his brothers. Yorei shelo yelech b'derech zekano. Kimitams leirech, let's stop over here. Yorei shelo yerach, or yorei shelo yelech b'derech zekano. What was Moshe Rabbeinu concerned about? Moshe Rabbeinu was concerned, this is very dramatic. Moshe Rabbeinu was concerned that Yoshua was going to mimic the ways of the Alter Zeta. What did the Alter Zeta, what did his grandfather do? Yosef brought a negative report about his brothers to his father. Yosef maligned his brothers for no reason. Now what that means is there was something wrong. Yosef, he had a pagam. There was something skewed in his eye and the way he perceived things. Moshe Rabbeinu is scared. Moshe Rabbeinu will see is not blind to the threat of the Meraglim. Is not blind that so often in life we misperceive things. He is most acute. He's not concerned about the Shvat, about the other Meraglim. He's most concerned about Yoshua because Yoshua comes from a lineage, is a descendant of someone who saw things in the wrong light. What was the result of Yosef seeing things in the wrong light and ultimately giving a negative report to his father? What was the result? What was the result? Horrific familial animosity. That is when, again, the dreams were bad. The dreams were bad, no question about that. But in addition to the dreams, the fact that Yosef maligned his brothers to his father, they couldn't look at Yosef in the right way. Says the Kli Yoter, Moshe Rabbeinu is scared. Is Yoshua going to commit the same mistake? So what does he do? What does he do? He bolsters him with an extra yud. He adds an extra yud. He adds a part of the Shem Hashem to Yoshua, to Hosea, hoping that this extra almost booster shot of spirituality, this extra divine infusion, will keep Yoshua's perspective focused. He will not end up seeing something negative that is not really there and not deliver a disastrous report. So I told you, it was worth it to come for this Chizkuni. Because remember, this is so dramatically different than anything we ever learn in this story. We always think that Yoshua was always the one who was safe. Yoshua was the good one. Yoshua was the one that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't have to worry about. Says the Kli Yoter, not true at all. In fact, perhaps again to a fault, Moshe Rabbeinu trusted all the other Meraglim. Remember, Moshe Rabbeinu has no reason not to trust them. These are good, upstanding citizens of Klal Yisrael. There is no reason to think that they were going to do what they did, because if there was a reason to think that, then Moshe Rabbeinu wouldn't have sent them. But the one person he's suspicious of, not suspicious because he thinks Yoshua has ulterior motives, but the one person he's concerned may have a skewed view of the land is Yoshua, because Yoshua's grandfather made the same mistake of having the skewed view, and that skewed view put into motion a whole trajectory of events that had catastrophic, horrible results. Moshe Rabbeinu therefore specifically davens for Yoshua and ultimately gives him an additional booster shot of spirituality to hope to keep him focused and keep his vision aligned with the true gift of Eretz Yisrael. Okay, so look at number four. So now, yes. Oh, so good, excellent. So the question was, why isn't he worried about Menasha, the tribe leader of Menasha? So Brucha Shekivan, the Kli Yoter discusses that. So the Kli Yoter explains, because again, Ephraim was the dominant one. And so he figured the tribal leader of Menasha was not going to break ranks with Yoshua, the tribal leader of Ephraim. So as long as Yoshua was in line, so Menasha would also fall in line as well. Excellent question. Take a look at number eight. So far, here's what we have. Remember, we have three basic, we're dealing only with one simple question tonight. It's our first week back after a little bit of break. I'm taking it easy on you, nothing too complex. Simple question, why is Moshe Rabbeinu changing Yoshua's name now? So remember again, what was the first approach? Truth is, it's not really happening now. In fact, again, it happened earlier. Why is he changing Yoshua's name? It's reflective, again, of what? Of the incredible confidence that Moshe Rabbeinu has in Yoshua to be someone great. As we saw again in the Sfarno, that Yehoshua, as opposed to Moshe, represents someone who's not just going to be personally significant, but someone who's going to be nationally significant as well. Someone who's going to help redeem the people, help provide salvation. Second approach, why is Moshe Rabbeinu changing Yoshua's name now? Second approach, to disguise his identity. Disguise his identity. He's concerned he's going to be close to the Amalekite tribal national territory. They're going to hear that Hoshea is there. They're going to put a price on his head, change his name, protect his identity. Third approach, Kliyakar. Why is Moshe changing Hoshea's name? Why?
Grandfather.
Because again, he's concerned, not about anyone else, but Hoshea. I'm concerned that you are going to repeat the mistakes of your grandfather, of Yosef. Therefore, I'm giving you a spiritual booster shot. Hopefully, that will keep your vision intact, keep your vision aligned, and you will not see anything negative in the land. Now we come to number eight. And number eight, which is our fourth approach for tonight, is where we get probably into the narrative of the story that most of us are familiar with. The Gemara Maseches Sota says the following. Yoshua kivar bikesh Moshe alav rachmim. And remember, this is what Rashi himself quotes. So the Gemara says, now what's happening over here? That Moshe Rabbeinu davened for divine compassion, divine rachmim on Yoshua. Shneemar, vayikra Moshe lo'Hoshea binun Yehoshua. Why does Moshe Rabbeinu add the Yud to Hoshea's name? The Gemara says, Ka Yoshi'acha me'atzos miraklim. It was a tefillah. Moshe Rabbeinu was supplicating on behalf of Yoshua to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the X-ray represents HaKadosh Baruch Hu, please save Yehoshua me'atzos. Atzos miraklim means what? The advice or the counsel, the collective wisdom of the spies. And in fact, in number 9, the Medrash echoes the same sentiment. Lo'Hoshea benun Yehoshua, writes the Medrash. Yehoshua, Milamed, Shenispalel alav Moshe Rabbeinu. This teaches us that Moshe Rabbeinu davened for Yehoshua. V'hosif lo os achos mishmoshe l'Kodesh Baruch Hu. And what does Moshe Rabbeinu do? He goes ahead and he adds in an additional letter from the name of God to the name of Yehoshua. V'amar ka Yoshi'acha mi'atzos miraklim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu should save you from the counsel of the sages. Now, there's something very dramatic unfolding over here. This is dramatic on a number of levels. It's dramatic, number one, because it tells us that Moshe Rabbeinu feels that something is going to go wrong. Moshe Rabbeinu almost has a hunch that something is going to go wrong. Why does Moshe Rabbeinu have a hunch that something is going to go wrong? Well, the truth is, klal gadol in life is that whenever you second guess the direct promise of God, things are not going to go out. The Ribbono Shel Olam tells you, the land is good. I'm ready to take you in there. And you say, no, let me inspect it first. It can't turn out well. Now, granted, again, like the Ramban and others explained, so if Moshe Rabbeinu had such a negative feeling about the reconnaissance mission, why does he let them go? What does he let them go? So, I'm sorry? So first of all, again, you have to understand something. That question presupposes that he could have stopped them from going. Right? Who's to say that even if he said you can't go, they would have listened? And even if they would listen, he then has to deal with all of the anger and the strife that's going to come about as a result. But it could just be very simply on it. So again, the Ramban explains, others explain, that the reason Moshe was willing to let this go was because he felt the truth is there could be a toilet, there could be a benefit. What's the benefit? You know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells us to go in, but we have to put in some hishtadlus as well. We have to put in some human effort. What's our human effort? Which way should we go in? What are the right paths? We want to go by water sources. We want to see which are the fortified cities, not the fortified cities. Meaning Moshe Rabbeinu gives them a whole list of questions that they are supposed to go ahead and examine when they go into Eretz Yisrael. So again, on one hand, Moshe Rabbeinu could have a pit in his stomach about, I really hope this does not go south, while at the same time still allowing it to go forward, thinking that it could potentially have some positive byproducts. In any event, what's happening over here is clearly Moshe Rabbeinu is worried about Yehoshua. He feels again that Yehoshua is going to be prone to the negative word. Now, it could be like we saw before, maybe it's like the Kliyakar, that maybe again, maybe he's worried about Yehoshua. Why? Because Yehoshua is a descendant of Yosef. Yosef was the one who slandered. Maybe again, Yeshua has that same recessive slander gene as well. And he's going to go ahead and slander Eretz Yisrael. That's possible. But perhaps there's something else unfolding over here also. But we have to go on a little bit of a detour. Take a look at number 10. Rav Chaim Paltiel writes the following. And you can see I include a little bit of a biography as well on the page. So Rav Chaim Paltiel writes the following. This is now number 10. So he writes, Mi utema, kivan diyada Moshe, da'atzasem hayal ra'a, kidiperish, imkei lamashalcham, v'halo haya over lifnei ivra lo sitei mirshol. So this is quite amazing. So Rav Chaim Paltiel, he amplifies the question even more. Moshe Rabbeinu, if you really feel that this is a bad idea, if you really feel that ultimately, again, this is not going to end well for the Jewish people, then how can you let them go? By letting them go, are you not placing a stumbling block in front of a blind person? The people are blind. They don't necessarily know better. And by you letting them go, you're placing a stumbling block. So Chaim Paltiel answers, he says, Dehem hit'u, duhu amar alu zebanegev, kilomar, lo amar lahem laleches, rak bisamoch l'dorom. So this is amazing. So Rav Chaim Paltiel says, and again, we could spend a lot more time on this, but we're not going to. Rav Chaim Paltiel writes, he says, if you look at Moshe Rabbeinu's instructions to the spies, what does he tell them? He tells them, go in through the south, stick to the southern border. Why did he tell them to stick to the southern border? Rav Chaim Paltiel writes, he says, Kilomar, lo omer lam leches rapisam l'dorom, ki sham lo hayu arim b'tsuros. Moshe Rabbeinu, however he knew the layout of the land, and he knew that along the southern border region, there were no fortified cities. There were no fortified cities. And what else? And what else? And the truth is, there was not all that much habitation, which makes sense because the southern part of Eretz Yisrael is by the desert. So he told them, look, you have an itch. You need to go ahead and see the land for yourself. No problem. Go to the south. Go to the south. You're not going to run into anyone. You're not going to encounter any enemies. You're not going to see the Chiti and the Amori and the Perizi and the Amaleki. You're not going to run into any of them. You're also not going to see any fortified cities. What are you going to see? What are you going to see? Sand. You'll see some sand, a couple of palm trees, a couple of date palms. You know, that's what you're going to see. It's going to look very pretty. You're going to come back and say, guys, we've got this one in the bag. No problem. Let's go. But what happens? Says Rav Chaim Paltiel. They didn't listen. They didn't listen. What happens? Behem holchu litzad acher ki dichsiv vayalu vayasu es haaretz midbar tzin. So what Chaim Paltiel is pointing out over here is Moshe Rabbeinu is in a very difficult spot because on one hand, again, let's play this out. The people say we want to send spies. If Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't allow them to do that, he runs the risk A of angering them. What else does he run the risk of? Moshe, what are you hiding? What are you hiding? If the land is all that great, if the land is all wonderful, let's go see it. What is the big deal? If you don't want us to see it, right? Imagine you're buying a house and the realtor says you're going to love it. Okay, when can we see it? No, don't worry about it. I'm telling you, I know your taste. You're going to love it. No one in their right mind is going to go ahead and take that. You wouldn't do that because no matter how much you trust the realtor, I'm not making the investment to buy a home without seeing it myself. So Moshe Rabbeinu, you want us to trust you and you don't even want to let us see it. Well, what are you hiding if you don't want to let us see it? So Moshe Rabbeinu has to let them go. Either again, and there's a redeeming factor, they'll see which way to come into the land. They can learn military strategies. Rav Chaim Paltiel, keep them to the southern border. Keep them away from anything that could get them nervous, upset, anxious, or afraid. But they deviate from the flight plan. Instead, they start meandering all over the land. And that's where they run into the Anakim, the giants. That's where they run into all the hostile nations, the fortified cities. Okay, so now if you look at number 11, but again, remember, what we're trying to focus on over here is clearly Moshe Rabbeinu is going into this with his eyes wide open. He knows already that there is the potential for something negative to happen. But he also realizes that what? That what? He has to what? He has to allow them to go. So he tries to whatever to be possible to leverage his risk, to leverage the potential fallout. But despite all of that, Moshe Rabbeinu's greatest concern is Yehoshua. Moshe Rabbeinu's greatest concern is Yehoshua. Now again, the reason why this is so dramatic and almost a little bit counterintuitive is we would have thought that if there was one person Moshe Rabbeinu should not have to worry about, it would have been who? Yehoshua. Right? Kalev also. But certainly Yehoshua. And Yehoshua even more. Because at the end of the day, Yehoshua was Moshe's nar. Yehoshua was Moshe's right-hand man. Yeshua's been in on this mission, in on this mandate from the beginning. Remember again, Yeshua was the one who went up on the mountain, not all the way up on the mountain, but went up on the mountain with Moshe Rabbeinu. He's the one who saw God more than... So if there's one person you want to daven for all the other guys, if I was Moshe Rabbeinu, I would have added 5 yuds to each of those other guys' names, and I wouldn't have worried so much about Yeshua. But yet, Moshe Rabbeinu is most worried about Yeshua. Why? Take a look at number 11. It's Yerushalmi. A beautiful Yerushalmi. So Yerushalmi writes, Rav Huna b'shem Rabbi Acha, Yud shenatol HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Me'imenu Sara, the Yud that HaKadosh Baruch Hu took from the name of Sarimen. Remember again, Sarah's name was originally Sarai. So the Yud that HaKadosh Baruch Hu took from her name, actually, the Gemara has 2 different Gersos, according to 2 different versions. According to the first portion of the Gemara, HaKadosh Baruch Hu took the Yud from Sarah's name, and what did he do? He's such a very beautiful. He split the Yud in half. How did he split the Yud in half? Remember, the numerical value of Yud is 10. What does it mean he split in half? He gave a hey to Sarah and a hey to Avraham. Beautiful, beautiful idea. You can use it for a Sheva Bracha, so I'm pretty sure. In any event, so I'm not going to focus on that one. But look what the Gemara says. Ola Yud, v'nishtateach l'tnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the Yud goes up to Shamayim, and the Yud literally prostrates itself before God. V'omar, the Yud says, Ribon ha'olamim, akartani minat tzadekes hazos. So the Yud, obviously again, you of course know these Gemaras are not to be understood literally. Chazal tried to teach us a message, which we will see what the message is, and just there's no Yud speaking to God at any point in time. But in any event, what the Gemara is saying is the Yud goes, and the Yud has a gripe against God. I was so happy. I was so happy being in the name of Sarai. I was so happy being part of the identity of that tzaddikus. Now you took me out of Sarai. You took me out of that identity. And now what? And now what? I'm sitting here in Shamayim. I mean, it doesn't sound so bad. But again, I'm sitting here and you deprived me of the opportunity to be part of the identity of this great woman. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Tzeilecha. Tzeilecha literally means what? Like, get out of here. Stop bothering me. Why? I have big plans for you. L'sha'avar ha'yisa b'sof teva. When you were in Sarai's name, Sarai's name, where were you? You were at the end of the name. Chayecha sha'ani nosencha b'rosh teva. You're going to see now, not only am I going to give you a good home and with a very righteous person, but what? I'm going to make you the first letter in the name. D'chsiv v'yikra Moshe La'oshea binun Yehoshua. So a beautiful Yerushalmi. So again, very different than the Gemara we saw before. The Gemara and the Medrash understand that the Yud represents an infusion of spirituality. That ultimately, again, Moshe Rabbeinu feels that Yehoshua perhaps needs a little bit more a divine hashkaf, a little bit more divine providence, a little more divine oversight, a little bit more emuna, bitachon, a strength, whatever it is that he needs. Yerushalmi says, no, no, no. This is not just any Yud. This was the Yud of Sarai. That Yud that has been Poreach Ba'avir. That Yud has been floating around now for a number of generations, looking for a home. And from the time that HaKadosh Baruch Hu removed that Yud from Sarai's name, the Ribono Shel Olam had big plans for the Yud. And what was the big plans for the Yud? To put it in the name of Yehoshua. What's the obvious question? What is going on over here? I mean, it's very nice. It's fascinating. You from Sarai, give it to Yehoshua. You know, what? First of all, what does Sarai have to do with Yehoshua? And why, again, we're like rationing yuds over here? Right? Why can't Yehoshua have his own yud? Why does he have to get, I don't want to share a yud. I want my own. Why does he have to get Sarai's yud? What? Obviously, Chazal are trying to teach us something through this Gemara. Let's take a look at number 12. Rav Sarotskin, in his Sefer Oznaim LaTorah, in his Perush Oznaim LaTorah, gives a beautiful insight. And the Oznaim LaTorah writes, in number 12, he says, V'tzarechiyun, lama bachra b'hoshea binun, l'hosif lo esayud. So, Rav Sarotskin quotes this Yerushalmi as well, and he asks our question, which is that why was Yehoshua chosen to be the recipient of the Sarai Yud? And Rav Sarotskin writes, he says, V'yesh lomar, listen to this, sha'al yidei sheshinu es shema misarai l'sara, nova lo yitzah. Because remember again, what happened when Sarai was changed to Sarah? What happened? She was given the blessing of a son, of Yitzchak. Va'adir chafeitzash haya, excuse me. And Yitzchak Avinu was exalted, beloved by God. She'yareish is called Eretz Yisrael. Ukimosh omer li'Avraham. Ki lo yirash ben ha'amo hazos in binyim Yitzchak. And remember again, what was the destiny of Yitzchak Avinu? What was Yitzchak Avinu's great inheritance? What was his inheritance? Eretz Yisrael. Yitzchak Avinu's great inheritance was the land of Israel. That was to be Yitzchak. So remember again, the land Eretz Yisrael, which was given at least entitled to Avram Avinu, could not have been passed down to the son he had with Hagar. It could only go to a child that he had with Sarah Imenu. So now there's a Yitzchak, so Sarai gets changed to Sarah. Sarai can't have a son, but Sarah can. That son is Yitzchak. That is a spiritual inheritor of the Abrahamic dynasty. And included with that is the title to Eretz Yisrael. He goes on. Umilui. So watch this. Get ready. So remember again, Sarai becomes Sarah. When that yud is taken out, that gives her the ability to become a mother to the child who is ultimately going to take possession over Eretz Yisrael. Umilui chafetzazeh nimser liyoshua. So amazingly enough, did Yitzchak Avinu ever take title over Eretz Yisrael? Did he ever take possession of Eretz Yisrael? No, he never did. He really didn't. Meaning Avram Avinu didn't either. Yaakov Avinu did not. None of the others did. Who was the first one who took title and possession over Eretz Yisrael? Yehoshua. Says Rav Saratskin, Shehu hinchil es ha'aretz liyisrael. Remember again, Moshe Avinu was supposed to, but he doesn't go in. Yehoshua is the one who leads the Jews in, and he's also the one who what? Who oversees the process of what we call kibush v'chiluk. The act ultimately of conquering the land and dividing up the land. U'lefichach magia lo b'tzedek hayud shenilkacha misarai. Such a beautiful insight. So Rav Saratskin writes, again, this is not just a haphazard, it's not just Cheshbon who needs a place to, you know, put the yud. It's okay, sorry, you don't have it, you put a yud. See, that yud, what does that yud represent? That yud represents the destiny. That yud represents the ability to ultimately inherit this Eretz Yisrael. Only once that yud was removed from Sarai, was she able to go ahead and have a Yitzchak. That yud, it's interesting, because by Sarai it represents an obstacle to her having Yitzchak, which is interesting, which is the obstacle to Eretz Yisrael. Rav Saratskin sees that yud as representing the destiny of Yisrael. Not Shem Hashem. It's the destiny of Yisrael. Am Yisrael, Eretz Yisrael. So Sarai has to become Sarah. But and interestingly enough, Sarai doesn't have that yud of destiny, because the truth is, the son that she's going to have is not going to inherit Eretz Yisrael. He has title to it, but he doesn't have physical possession of it. Who is going to get the yud? You know who's going to get the yud? The one who is going to fulfill the Abrahamic dynasty. The one who is going to see the actualization of the promise to Avram Avinu that the land is going to belong to the children of Avram. And who is going to be the one who actually sees and brings about that promise? Yehoshua. And therefore, says Rav Saratskin, Yehoshua is the one who gets the yud of Yisrael, Am Yisrael, Eretz Yisrael, the yud ultimately of Sarimini. But we're not finished. We're not finished. So okay, so now keep these pieces in mind. So we have now Yehoshua's name is being changed. So again, we have the Gemara Medrash, which we're putting on the side for now, about Kol Yoshi Achami Asas Meragim, that the Yud just represents name of God. We're going to focus a little bit more on the Yerushalmi, that the Yud is not just any ordinary Yud, but rather, again, that Yud is the Yud of Sarai Imenu. That is the Yud that represents the ability to ultimately enter, conquer, and inhabit Eretz Yisrael. Okay, look at number 13. The Targum Yonasan. So remember, Targum Yonasan was written by Yonasan ben Uziel, who was the primary disciple, the Talmud Mufak of Hillel. So what happens? So Targum Yonasan, and remember again, it's not just simply a translation, but rather again, it's a pirush, it's a commentary. So we know, we have to appreciate the fact that once upon a time, so Aramaic was the vernacular. So Aramaic was the language spoken by people. So something like an Unkelos or a Targum Yonasan is how very often uneducated masses were able to go ahead and learn Torah. So for us, it's a little bit more difficult because we're not proficient in Aramaic. But look what the Targum Yonasan writes. Now again, I want to be clear. The Targum Yonasan is commenting on number two on your sheet. So if you want to look back there for just one moment, if you can see, remember the pasuk. These are the names of the people that Moshe Rabbeinu sent to go ahead and spy out the land, scout the land. Vayikra Moshe, lo Shea binun Yoshua. So I'm only quoting to the Targum Yonasan and that last phrase. Vayikra Moshe, lo Shea binun Yoshua. Moshe Rabbeinu called Hoshea binun Yoshua. Look how the Targum interprets that pasuk. Vikad chama Moshe and visunuse. You know what that means? When Moshe Rabbeinu saw, and visunuse means what? The exceptional humility of Yoshua. Kara Moshe lo Shea binun Yehoshua. Ooh. So Tiger Mjornason adds in another dimension over here. So what's happening? Moshe Rabbeinu sees something. Remember again, everything is pointing in the same direction. Moshe Rabbeinu is concerned about something. Moshe Rabbeinu is alarmed about something. Again, he's alarmed about all of the miraculum. Let's be clear. But for some reason, he is most acutely concerned about Hosea. Says the Targum Yonasan, what does Moshe Rabbeinu see about Yehoshua that alarms him? Not like the Kliyakar that he's worried about Yosef. He's not worried about the Alter Zeda. What is he worried about? He sees that Yehoshua possesses excessive humility. But isn't that good? Isn't that good? Va'ish Moshe. Anav Mikol Adam Moshe. That's good. You know what that means? That means, Moshe, you're a true Rebbe. You're a true Mechanich. Right? You're unlocking the potential within your Talmud. You're an Anav. You live your life with the modicum of Anivus, of humility. And now you've transmitted that to Yehoshua. Your Talmud is so... What are you worried about? Look at number 14. This is from the Sefer Shemin Atov. He quotes the Magid of Kozhnitz. And the Kozhnitzer Magid says something so beautiful. He says, the Kozhnitzer Magid writes, Ubishim HaMagid MiKozhnitz Amru. In the name of the Magid of Kozhnitz, it was said, Dechevan di Yehoshua Shama Nivuas Eldad Umedad Amar Kilaim. Now remember again, let's pause here for just a moment. Go down to number 15 for just a second. Do you remember again, in last week's parasha, Moshe Rabbeinu flips out because he can't handle the people anymore. He's upset, he's disappointed, he's had enough. He just said, Kadosh Baruch Hu, I need help. And what does Kadosh Baruch Hu says? It's no problem. I'll go ahead and I will take from I'll take from your ruach, and I'll go ahead and I'll give it to other people who can help you as well. So if you look at number 15, what happens? So people begin prophesizing in the middle of the camp. Then they stop, except for two people. So word gets back to Moshe Rabbeinu that what? Eldad Umedar, everybody else stopped prophesizing, but Eldad Umedar are still prophesizing. Vayan Yoshua ben Nun Misharis Moshe Mahurav. So Yoshua ben Nun, Yoshua the son of Nun, Moshe's servant from his youth, from Yoshua's youth, says to Moshe, Vayomer Adoni Moshe, Kila'im. Now, literally, the translation over Kila'im is imprison them. But the truth is, Kila'im actually can also mean what? Destroy them. Like color, destroy them. So why is Yoshua having such a strong reaction? Why Kila'im? Why are you saying destroy them? Look at Rashi HaKadosh says in number 16. What got Yoshua so upset? Lefisha hayum misnavim. Because what were Eldad Umedad prophesizing? What were they saying? Moshe meis v'Yoshua machnis es Yisrael la'aretz. Because what were Eldad and Medad saying? In front of everyone, Moshe is going to die. Yoshua is going to take the people into the land of Israel. Now again, remember, what's so dramatic about this? This prophecy is occurring when? When? Before what? Before the Chet HaMeragim, before the sin of the spies, and of course, before, again, the Chet, before the sin of Mei Meriva, before Moshe Rabbeinu hits the rock. So the assumption is things are going to go according to plan. Moshe Rabbeinu is taking us into Eretz Yisrael, no problem. Suddenly, Eldad Umedad, our brand new prophets, their first day on the prophecy job, right? They just clocked in, and suddenly what? They're spewing forth dramatic prophecies. Moshe's going to die. Yoshua's going to take them in. And Yoshua says, Moshe, please, Rebbe, stop them. Stop them. There's something about this that instills fear into the heart of Yoshua. Something about this that panics Yoshua. Adoni Moshe, kila'im. Whatever you have to do, imprison them, kill them, destroy them. Whatever you have to do, just make them stop. Now go back to number 14. Says the Kozhnitzer Magid. Va'amar kila'im. Number 14, second line. Actually, third line. Va'amar kila'im. Yitochim. So what happens? Now says the Kozhnitzer Magid. So what did we see in last week's parasha? In last week's parasha, we saw that what? That Moshe Rabbeinu Eldad Umedad are prophesizing, Moshe's going to die, Yoshua's going to take them in. Yoshua's already viscerally upset about this. Viscerally upset that he just heard his Rebbe's going to die and that I'm taking them in. Tells Moshe to stop them. And what is Moshe, by the way, I didn't put it here, but what does Moshe going to tell Yoshua? What does Moshe tell Yoshua? Right, so Moshe says, what do you want from me? You know, again, I control a lot of things. Who becomes a prophet is not something that's in my job description. I don't have power about that. So Kadosh Baruch Hu wants to make everybody a Navi. That's the divine prerogative. I have no control. Whatever they're going to say, they're going to say, whatever they're going to do, they're going to do. I have no control over that. So says the Kozhnitzer Magid something amazing. Number 14, Yitochim. Moshe Rabbeinu was concerned about the following thing. The Yihya lo Negia la'akev bias ha'aretz. Moshe Rabbeinu says the Kozhnitzer Magid was concerned about Yoshua. Why was he concerned about Yoshua? Because he thought that Yoshua was going to sabotage the mission. Why would Yahushua sabotage the mission? Because Yahushua knows. He heard it from Eldad Omeda last week. I mean, more than last week. We heard it last week. He heard it last week that what? That what happens when Am Yisrael goes into Eretz Yisrael? What happens? Moshe Rabbeinu is dead. There's only one way that we go into Eretz Yisrael, and that's if Moshe Rabbeinu is dead. Says the Kajnitzer Magid. Moshe Rabbeinu knew how much his Talmud loved him. You know, the relationship between a Talmud and a Rebbe, between a student and a teacher, is very different than any other relationship. It's even in certain degrees, in certain ways, it's closer even than a parent with a child. The Gemara says, a parent brings me into this world, but my Rebbe brings me to the world to come. Yahushua, to say that Yahushua loved Moshe Rabbeinu like a father is not even correct. He loved him like a Rebbe. He loved him like he was a chilek, he was a part of his neshama. When Yahushua hears that his Rebbe is going to die, he's not going to inherit his soul, I'm going to take him. Yahushua can't absorb that. And Moshe Rabbeinu is now concerned. He sits Yahushua down, says the Kajnitzer Magid. And he says to Yahushua, I know what you're thinking. And don't do it. I know you're thinking about sabotaging the mission. I know exactly why you're going to sabotage the mission, because you don't want me to die. Because you know, however these events are going to unfold, you know that you're taking them in, and I'm not. And I know you have a Yetzirah to try to undermine and sabotage the mission. Why? It says, Kidei, end of number 14, Kidei, Sheyichya Moshe. Kidei Sheyichya Moshe. V'lachein, Hispalel Alav B'miyuchad. Therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu davens for Yahushua specifically, that he should have the koach, he should have the strength to be able to do what needs to be done. What's unfolding over here? So if we bring this all together, we emerge with a very dramatic picture. Going back to the Targum Yonasan for just a moment. What was Moshe Rabbeinu most concerned about? What was Moshe Rabbeinu most concerned about, according to Targum Yonasan? What did he see in Yahushua? You know, humility is very good. But too much, and again, humility is actually one of those midos, one of those attributes that you're supposed to have a lot of. But you know, you can also overdose on humility. And what happens if you overdose too much on humility? You know, the Gemara Masechet Sota says that a Talmud Chacham has to have a Shminis Shebishminis. You have to have a little bit of Gaiva. A little bit of arrogance. Because if you're all humble, totally humble, humble to an excessive extreme, what happens? What happens? What happens? You think that you can't accomplish anything. You think that everything is beyond you. You think that your reach simply doesn't extend. Who am I? Who am I? What can I possibly do? What can I possibly accomplish? I'm a shmendrik. I don't have any abilities. I don't have any skill sets. I'm not great. Look at this one. Look at that one. Who am I? I'm a nothing. Says the Targum Yonasan, Moshe Rabbeinu saw the excessive humility of Yahushua. And what does he say to Yahushua? I know what you're thinking. And don't think it. I know what you're contemplating. Don't contemplate it. You think you're going to sabotage this to keep me alive? At the end of the day, Yahushua, if you're honest with yourself, you're not doing it for me. You know why you're doing it? If you sabotage, you know why you're doing it? You know why you're doing it? Because you're afraid. Because you're too afraid to assume your destiny. Because you're too afraid to assume the reins of responsibility. Because you're happy to stay in the background. Because you're happy to be in my tent. Because you're happy to be in my shadow. Because you're happy not to be the achroi, bless you. Not to be ultimately the one who is responsible for moving the national agenda forward. And my dear Talmud, what I'm telling you is don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. You can do this. You've been groomed for this. Yes, it could be. Remember again, Moshe and Yahushua both have absolutely no idea what the Nevuah of Eldad Umeida means. They have no idea, but they both heard it. And so Moshe Rabbeinu has to convince Yahushua. He sees the excessive humility and it scares him. He has to tell Yahushua, your name is Yahushua. You know why your name is Yahushua? What does Moshe Rabbeinu tell Yahushua? You know why your name is Yahushua? According to Yerushalmi, what does Moshe Rabbeinu tell Yahushua? You know whose Yud you just got? Do you know whose Yud you just got? You just got, I just gave you Sarah Imenu's Yud. That Yud is yours. It's your destiny. It's your mandate. It's your mission. You can do it. I know you're scared. And I'm scared for you, because what parent is not scared when their child strikes out on their own? What Rebbe is not scared when a student strikes out on his own? I'm scared for you also. But I also have incredible confidence that you can do it. Don't be scared up. You see, what's amazing is now everything comes together. Because what did the Gemara say? Not Yerushalmi. The Gemara, which Gemara did we quote? The Gemara from Maseches Sota and the Medrash, Remember, Moshe Rabbeinu also says that what? God should save you from the advice, from the counsel of the spies. What was Moshe Rabbeinu most concerned about with the spies? Now, my friends, let me ask you a simple question. Why did the Meraglim give a bad report to Eretz Yisrael? Why did they give a bad report? One word. That word also. Okay, the second word. Right. Change. People don't like change. People are scared of change. Change might mean more work. Change might mean more effort. Now, the change could be wonderful for me. The change could be significant for me. The change will open up so many magnificent doors for me. It doesn't matter. I don't know it. I don't know what to expect. My dear friends, it's Maisim B'chol Yom every single day. People settle for a mediocre present because they're too scared to embark on the journey of life. Because they're too scared to open new doors. They're too scared to try new things. They're too scared to push themselves because they don't know what's waiting on the other side of that life opportunity. It is so much easier just to live in the world of present. I'm going to give you the proof to this. Look at number 17. Well, what do they say? So the Meraglim come back. And they say, you know what? It's giants over here. They're mighty nations. So what do they say? Let's go back to Egypt. Now, I want to tell you something. All right, you don't want to go to Eretz Yisrael? You don't want to go to Eretz Yisrael? No problem. How about Hawaii? Right? You know, how about California? You know, how about Uganda? It's okay, fine. You want to say Eretz Yisrael is not the place for you because you're too scared of it. That's okay, but remember, you're 3.5 million people. You have a mighty fighting force. You've already done war. You've killed out Sihon. You've killed out Og. You know, you've already done incredible, incredible things. I mean, they didn't kill Sihon and Og yet. They're going to do that later. But you fought Amalek. You've already done incredible things. So why don't you go settle somewhere else? Why would you go back to Egypt? And the answer is because that's what they knew. That's what they knew. It stinks. It's terrible. It's inhumane. It's barbaric. They mistreat us. They throw our babies into the Nile. Okay. But at least we know it. I know what to expect. I know what's going to happen. I know what tomorrow is going to bring. I know what the next day is going to bring. So you know what? If you give me a choice between a subpar, mediocre present and an unknown, potentially great future, clinical tests have shown that most people will choose the mediocre, subpar present. And so Moshe Rabbeinu says to Yoshua, Ka Yoshi'acha mi'atzos miraglin. I am praying that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should give you the strength to save you from the counsel of the spies. Again, remember, Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't know that they're going to do something bad for sure, because if he would have known what was going to happen, remember, he would not have sent them, and he would have dealt with the wrath of the people. He did not know, but Moshe Rabbeinu did know human nature, and Moshe Rabbeinu knew that the truth is the land was only going to be acquired with incredible challenges, and he also knew there was a risk that when the people saw the challenges, they might very well say, you know what, desert's not so bad. It gets cool at night. Right? It's not so bad. You know, we could live here. We have man. We could exist here. We'll find somewhere else. He knew this was going to be the challenge. So he says to Yoshua, I beg of you, don't be scared of change. Don't be scared to go at it alone. Don't be scared to open your doors. Don't be scared to seize your opportunities. The yud that I'm putting in your name is the yud of Sari Imenu. It's good to be humble, but don't be so humble that you think ultimately, again, you can't do anything great. That's ka yoshi'acha me'atzas maradim. So if we put this all together, what we come out with over here is this simple little name change yields so many profound life lessons. Of course, again, as we saw in the beginning, why does Moshe Rabbeinu change Yoshua's name? Remember, we had three quick approaches. We had the Chizkuni, the name change happened earlier, and ultimately, again, was a sign of Moshe Rabbeinu's incredible confidence in Yoshua, that he has the ability not just to be great personally, but to be great nationally. We saw the second approach, that Moshe Rabbeinu was changing Yoshua's name to go ahead and protect him from the Amaleki. We saw the third approach, that he's concerned that Yoshua is going to have a skewed view of the land because he is descendant of Yosef, therefore adds that the Yud as a spiritual booster shot. And then we saw that there are two different symbolisms of the Yud, either that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should save you, or according to our fourth approach, we don't have to go through it all again, but according to the fourth approach, what's really happening over here? Moshe Rabbeinu is teaching Yeshua a lesson, and by extension, all of us as well. Sometimes in life, there are great opportunities that come our way. So the truth is, people don't usually say, you know what, I'm scared, I'm lazy, I don't really want to work, or I'm happy to be mediocre. People don't normally admit those things. Instead, what do people say when opportunities come along and they really don't want to do it? It's the right opportunity, but they don't want to. What do they say? It's not the right time. When is the right time? I don't know, but when it's here, I'll know it. So I check back with me in 5 years. That might be a right time. In 5 years, I'm a little bit busy. Come back another 7 years. Again, and we push off and we push off and we push off. Why? Because we're scared. Because we're scared. And that's what Yeshua was going to do. Rebbe, I don't want you to die. I don't want you to die. And Moshe Rabbeinu says, don't be a fool. Don't be excessively humble. When life presents you with opportunities, very often, those opportunities are difficult. Very often, those opportunities are turbulent. Very often, those opportunities are things that you have to enter into all by yourself. You can't take your parents with you. You can't take your friends with you. You can't take your Rebbe with you. You often have to actualize your destiny all by yourself. But don't be afraid. Yeshua, this is your destiny. You have the Yud of Sarah. Yeshua, don't be so humble. I believe in you. You've been trained for this. All of your chinuch, all of your education, your entire spiritual maturation has been for this. Don't be afraid to extend yourself for your destiny. Because if you become the kind of person that is willing to settle for present mediocrity, because it doesn't push you, it doesn't expect anything from you, you're going to be stuck in that rut your entire life. And of course, we see the lesson is so profound for us as well. You know, we have destinies. Each of us has a destiny. What that is, we often don't know. We spend our lives trying to figure it out. But one thing we do know is very often we are presented with incredible life opportunities. And we justify to ourselves many times as to why we're not taking those opportunities. And sometimes you're not supposed to take every single opportunity. Some opportunities you're supposed to let pass. Some doors are not supposed to be open. But sometimes we don't take our opportunities because we're scared. And we justify our fear because it's not the right time, or because I'm exceptionally humble, or because who am I? What we learn from Yehoshua is don't miss your opportunities in life. There's no such thing as a great opportunity that comes without risk. There's no such thing as a great opportunity that comes without fear. Kol Yoshi'acha Me'atzos Meraglin, the Yud of Sora attaches to Yehoshua and teaches us that we too have to find the courage. We too have to find the strength. We too have to stop making excuses for not taking advantage of our opportunities. Yehoshua found his courage. He found his inner voice. He found his Yud, and we should be zochah to do the same. All right, it's not here. There is Mariv in the Beis Medrash now. Whoever needs.